So we spent some time last week talking a little bit about this phrase, Chazak B'Amatz and Chazak B'Amatz Me'od, and the reference to being very strong and courageous because of the conquest, the observance of the Torah, or the law of the laws of the Torah, or the law specifically with regards to the conquest of Canaan. And we talked about that last week. It's all posted, and I'm going to continue here from verse 10, Pasuk Yud. Vayitzav Yeshua et shotrei ha'am lemor. At this point, Yeshua now turns to the people and goes through the officers, and he starts to instruct them in preparation for what is going to be the crossing of the Jordan River and the entrance into the land of Canaan. Ivru bekerav ha'machaneh. He tells the officers, the people, the leaders, to go through the camp. And tell the people, instruct them. You know, we always have this question: how does, in a world pre-electronics, how do you communicate with an army of hundreds of thousands? Well, you had a rank. That's what the rank and file. That's what the hierarchy of command was for. So you turned to the shotrim, and they went through the camp. Vitzavu ta'am lemor, hachinu lachem tzeda. Prepare food. Because in 3 days you are going to pass over this Jordan River. Time to go and conquer and settle the land that God has promised us. If you remember our discussion from a few weeks ago, Reuven, Gad, and it always translates half of Menashe. Not half of Menashe, it's a part of Menashe. Chetzi can also mean a part. And it's only part of the tribe of Menashe. Nonetheless, he says, Amar Yeshua lemor, Zachor et hadavar shesivatcha Moshe ved Hashem lemor. Remember your pledge, your commitment, and the command that Moshe gave you, lemor. Hashem elokechem eniach lachem enatan lachem et haaretz hazot. God has enabled you to stay, or your families to stay, and to settle this land taken from Sichon and Og. Nishechem, tapchem, umiknechem, yishu ba'aretz asher natan lachem Moshe be'ever ha'yarden. Your family, your wives, your children, your possessions, everything stays here. But you v'atem tavru chamushim lifnei achichem kol gibrei achayel v'azartem otam. But you shall pass before your brothers, armed, part of the battle force of the war, chamushim lifnei achichem kol gibrei achayel, mighty men of valor, v'azartem otam, and assist them. Ad ashiyaniach Hashem l'achichem kachem, v'yarshu gamhem et ha'aretz asher Hashem elokechem noten lahem. You have to be part of that war until the rest of the tribes of Israel are able to settle in their land. Then you can go back to your land and you can continue to live there and settle there. The part that God, Moshe gave you on the east side of the yard. They answered Yeshua saying, we will do what we have been commanded. We will go where you send us. We are ready to be the... And in fact, they did. In fact, we'll see it later on in the text, that they, in fact, were the first. They were the chalutzim. They were the first ranks of the soldiers in the army of Israel. It was a very, very powerful and very inspiring role. And their loyalty to Yeshua is expressed here really in extraordinary terms. They say to them, we, as we listen to Moshe, we will listen to you. There's no question as to our loyalty to you. And that's sort of a subtext of our study of Yeshua, of the book, is to understand the role that Yeshua played, constant reference to Moshe, constant reference and deference to his role as continuing the legacy of Moshe. On the other hand, he had a loyalty amongst the people that was really extraordinary. Kol ish asher yamre et picha v'lo yishma et dvarecha l'chol asher titzavenu yumat. Rak chazak v'yamatz. Yeshua, you don't need to worry about us. We are going to be your front guard. Anybody who tries to challenge you, I'll have to answer to us. We will protect you. We will be loyal to you. Be strong. Be courageous. Charge, as they say, right? Let's go. I want to pick up one observation here, actually two. One is a sidebar altogether, and that is the word chamushim. Clearly in this context, the word chamushim means armed. Chamush. There's a fascinating role, but kind of it's a window into a fascinating balance between pshat and drash. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the Medrash that when Israel left Egypt, only one-fifth of them left because the other four-fifths died in the plague of the darkness. Rashi quotes it in the beginning of Parshat Bashalach when the verse says, V'chamushim malu b'nei Yisrael m'mitzrayim. The b'nei Yisrael left Israel chamushim. And Rashi offers the drash that it's chamushim from the word chamesh, one-fifth of them left Israel. Rashi offers that as a drash for reasons not our subject for today, but only as a second interpretation. His primary interpretation, which he says on the spot, is that the word chamushim means mizuyanim, armed, ready for war. They had the arms that they took from the spoils of Egypt. And he quotes this verse as proof that the word chamush means armed, as it does in modern Hebrew as well. It's a very interesting kind of balance between the world of pshat and drash, but you see here clearly the word chamushim does not mean a fifth. It means, in fact, armed and ready for battle. That's one observation. The other observation is a timetable in this reference, meaning they are ready to go and cross the Yarden when? Okay, they are sitting on the banks of the Yarden on the east side, and Yeshua's instruction is that they are going to cross 3 days hence. Ki ba'od shloshet yamim atem ovim et ha'Yarden hazeh. That's a fascinating reference. There are a few chronological anchor points in Sefer Yeshua that are important. In addition to this reference, if we work our way forwards and then backwards, Chazal learned something very powerful from this discussion. When did they in fact cross the Yarden? What date was it that they in fact crossed the Jordan River? So that's explicitly referenced in the text. That is in chapter 4, verse 19, Pasuk Dalet, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Tet. Ve'ha'am alu min ha'yarden be'asor l'chodesh ha'rishon. People came out of the Jordan, meaning they crossed the Jordan, on the 10th of the first month, meaning the 10th of Nisan. And that would explain why in the immediate aftermath of crossing the Jordan, the first two things they engage in are the mitzvah of Brit Milah, and then 3 days after that, the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. Because they're literally Erev Pesach. That's what they come out of the Jordan on the 10th of Nisan, and then 3 days for Brit Milah for the entire generation. We'll study that chapter a little bit later in the course. And the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach. Why is it important for us? Because Chazal derive from this date that crossed the Jordan on the 10th of Nisan, and that all of this chapter 1 is therefore happening on what date? When God speaks to Moshe and he says Moshe has to Yeshua and he says Moshe has died and now across the Jordan and at the end of the chapter Yeshua turns to the Shoftim and he prepares them and he says to them in another 3 days we are crossing the Jordan. What date is all of this happening? We now know because if he's telling them in another 3 days we're going to cross the Jordan and that day is the 10th of Nisan, so this date is the 7th of Nisan. So why is that important? Why is it significant that this is the 7th of Nisan? So Chazal actually derived from here the date of Moshe's passing. We have a tradition that the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu is the 7th of Adar. That reference comes from this verse. I'll show you the source in the Gemara. It's a Gemara in Kiddushin. This is on the source page, which... if you joined us after I posted it, I will repost it. Copy link. Post. The Gemara says in Gemara Kedushin, B'shiv'a ba'adar met Moshe. Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. There's a separate issue which is based on a pasuk in Ve'elech that he also was born on the day that he died. That's not my subject for now. But how do I know that he died on the 7th of Nisan? Minayin shebishiv Abba Adai Met. So now we're going to work through all the texts. It says in the end of Chumash, Ve'yamot Shem Moshe Ved Hashem, Moshe, servant of God, died there. And immediately it says, Ve'yivku b'nei Yisrael et Moshe barvot ma'av 30 yom. They mourned for him, they cried for him for 30 days. And then it says, Ve'yachrei mot Moshe Eved Hashem. After Moshe's death, God says to Yeshua, Moshe avdi met, kum avor te'aden, it's now time to cross. And Yeshua says to the people, Achinu lechem tzedak, yibot shloshit yamim avor te'aden, 3 days you're going to cross the Yarden. And they came out of the Yarden on the 10th of the month. So working your way backwards, the 3 days in the beginning of Sefer Yeshua. The 30 days to mourn Moshe's death. From there we learn that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. This is a fascinating observation. That's a kind of a almost technical one. We'll see. For us, it has another significance and another lesson that of value as well. But the notion that we place so much emphasis on the fact that Moshe died on his yahrzeit as the 7th of Adar, don't always stop to think of where we get that from. But here we see the text. This is exactly what it's describing. The 7th of Adar of Nisan is when all of this is happening. Which brings us to beginning of Perek Bet, chapter 2. So just to put ourselves in perspective, this is on the 7th of Adar, the instruction from Yeshua to the people to prepare themselves. One second. We'll go back to where we were. To prepare themselves because we're going to cross the Yarden in 3 days' time. Why he needs 3 days, we'll see in a moment. I'm going to shift now to chapter 2. Right? Start from the beginning. Vayishlach Yoshua Binun. Min Hashitim. Shitim is where they're encamped. That's where the camp of Israel is. Yoshua ben Nun, they haven't moved. From the Moshe's death, they are still in Shitim. They have not moved. Vayishlach Yoshua ben Nun min Hashitim shnei anashim miraglim cheresh lemor. He sends 2 spies secretly, saying to them, L'chu ru'u et ha'aretz et yericho. Go and spy out the land. Go and see the land. Particularly Yericho. Sorry, I just got buzzed because I forgot to turn my phone to do not disturb. Give me a moment. Sorry about that. Go and spy out the land, particularly Yericho, because that's the city, first city they're going to conquer. Vayelchu. So they went. The spies were sent. They went. Vayavo beit isha zona ushma rachav vayishkevu shama. They went to the house of Rachav. We'll talk about that in a moment. But we all know the story. So I'm going to, text-wise, we're going to run through it, but we all know the story of Joshua's spies. But I want to highlight 2 interesting points right from the beginning as a kind of introduction. There's no transition between chapter 1 and chapter 2. Chapter 1, he's talking to the Shotrim, and he sends them out to the various parts of the camp of Israel to prepare them for 3 days as they from Shittim, because they're going to cross the Jordan. And then, Vayishlach Yeshua ben Nun min Hashittim, he sends out the spies. And he says, and that day, they arrive at the house of Rachav. They're not far from there. It doesn't take them several days to get there, right? They're not far. Is there a map of where they are? No, just maps of the archaeological dig of Tayyirich. Okay. Vayamar lemelech Yericho lemor, it was told to the king of Yericho, saying, Hinei anashim bao hena halayla. Behold, there came men from Israel this night to spy out the land, to spy out the city of Yericho. They arrive at night. I would assume they were sent at night, which would make sense for a different reason. I'll talk about that another time. It's probably Shabbat, but okay. Vayishlach melech Yericho lachav lemor, tzi anashim abayim alayecha shebao lebeitecha. they immediately discovered Yericho. King of Yericho says to Ahav, give us the people. And in the meantime, she took them, she hid them, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. I just want to skip and jump to a particular reference at the end. So in the meantime, she had taken them up to the rooftop, and she hid them there. And when the king's men came, she let them out through the window into the outside of the city. She had taken them up to the roof and hid them amongst the flax. Where did the king's men go chasing after them? The king's men went chasing them towards the Jordan, because the camp of Israel is on the other side of the Jordan. So Yericho, she says to them, they left. Right? That's what she said. She said, I skipped a verse. She took the two people up to the rooftop, and she hid them. But Toman, she says to the men, they came to me tonight. I don't know where they're from. The gate is about to shut, dark. They closed the gate of the city at night. Anashim itself, they left. I have no idea where they went. Litfu, go chase them. Go find them. You'll find them there. In the meantime, so the king's men go running logically in the direction of where the spies should be running to, which would be the Jordan, in order to cross back over to the camp of Israel. In the meantime, she took them up to the roof, and she hid them amongst the flax. And the king and his men, they went chasing after them towards the Jordan, to the fords of the Jordan. The gate closed. They left and they closed the gates behind them so that they wouldn't escape, come back to the city. The two spies were now on the roof of Rahav's house. They, before they even were able to lay down, she went up to them. She said to them, I know that God has given you this land, and that your fear and dread upon the land is palpable. The inhabitants of the land, their hearts have melted before you. The people in the city, in the land of Canaan, were afraid. We heard about how God dried up the waters of the Red Sea before you, when you left Egypt. And we heard all the battle stories about the wars with Sichon and Og. We heard, and our hearts were melted. There's nobody here who's going to challenge you, who has more fear of you. God on heaven is God above and God beneath on the land. We accept the power of your God and his authority. Swear to me by your God. I dealt kindly with you. You will also kindly deal kindly with my father's house. And give me a true sign that you will spare my life, and spare my life and the life of my mother, my brother, and sisters. Deliver us from death. The people said to Rahav, Nafshenu tachtechem lamut, im lo tagidu et varinu zeh. We will indeed pay you back kindness and truth. Just know that we are you may not tell anybody of this. This is a secret between us. And she let them out the window with a cord, a chevel. Ki veita bekir hachoma. Uva choma hi yoshavet. because her house was inside the walls. Walls in ancient walled cities were double walls, and they were an inner wall and outer wall, and her house was sitting inside the wall. And so from her window, she could let them out, and they could escape outside the city since the gates were already closed. And she says to them, go to the mountains. Because the king's men were chasing across the Yarden, so if you need to hide until they get back. Hide there for 3 days. This is why I read this now, because we can get back to those 3 days. Till they all come back and they have given up their pursuit. We will be free of this oath if you tell it to anybody. When we come into the land, this red thread, this scarlet thread, which you used to let us down out of the window, you need to leave it here so that there's a sign. So which house is yours? Because they're not going to go looking for an address. They're going to go conquer the city of Yericho. They're not going to go look for an address. Okay, where is the house of Rechav? And anybody whose life you want to spare, gather in your whole house, family into this house. We will spare this house. But know that you may not leave this house, right? This house is sanctuary. If you, anybody who leaves this house, is we won't be able to identify one from the other. But if they stay in this house, their blood will be on our heads. On our heads, if anybody touches them. And if you may not tell anybody of this oath, this agreement. They all agree, they leave, and she leaves the red cord, the red rope in the window. The spies went and they remained in the mountains for 3 days at Shavu Harotfim. The pursuers, they sought for them high and low, could not find them. So at the end of those 3 days, the pursuers left and the two spies came down from the mountain. They crossed back over the Jordan, and they explained to Yeshua everything that had transpired. The report of the two spies, God has given us this land, and the inhabitants, the heart of the inhabitants has melted away before us. We are ready to go.
It's interesting, isn't it?
There's a lot of interesting things. I'm going to unpack it all. What was your thought?
That Joshua's forces were killing innocent citizens, apparently.
No, but we'll get to that issue when I don't agree. We'll get to that issue when we get to the conquest itself, but. There's a lot of misunderstanding. I call this chapter a comedy of errors. Why a comedy of errors? That we have to unpack and see. But there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of misunderstanding, but it ends well, right? They come back with a beautiful understanding. But clearly this spy mission was a failure from beginning to end. And that's part of the mystery of why the Mefarshim struggle with the question, after Moshe's spies failed so abysmally, what did Yeshua think he was doing by sending spies again? And so part of our task is to understand, A, what Moshe's spy mission was and why it failed, and B, how did Yeshua's spy mission differ? And was it right or wrong for Yeshua to send spies? And did it fail or was it successful? And that is the bigger question, which we will get to in a moment. But the
There
other interesting
were
observation here,
spies.
excuse me.
Moshe weren't spies. They
Wait,
went
wait,
to
wait,
Egypt.
we'll get to Moshe. We're getting ahead of ourselves. They were
Fine.
spies. They were spies, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Hang on a second. I want to start from this reference to 3 days. They spend 3 days in the mountains, right? Which means that they were sent by Yoshua on the 7th of Nisan, right? That's when the book opens up, on the 7th of Nisan in chapter 1. Yeshua prepares the people because they're going to cross the Jordan in 3 days' time, and he sends spies. The spies return to the east side of the Jordan in 3 days from when they were sent. That's the same 3 days. So it's just an optical illusion. We have this perspective that Yeshua prepares the people to cross the Jordan. They get right, they move, they're 3 days, and then he sends spies, which the spies mission takes 3 days, but by the time the spy mission is over, where's the camp of Israel? They're still on the east side of the Jordan.
It
They're not
says they
waiting
are
for
home.
this, right? They're not waiting for the spies. So there's not two sets of 3 days here. They're overlapping. If they're overlapping, it basically means that Yeshua tells the spies, you go to Jericho, and then he moves the camp. Because if you look at the beginning of Perek Gimel, Vayashkem Yeshua Baboker, this Baboker is not the morning of the, it's not chronologically sequential. This is not the morning after the spies return. This is the morning after he sent the spies. Because Vayis'u me'ashitim ve'yavo ad ha'Yarden, end of the 3 days, they begin the preparation. So those 3 days, Yoshua is in Shittim. He prepares the people. He says, we're crossing the Jordan in 3 days' time. He sends the spies, and he says to them, ostensibly, meet us back here at the edge of the Jordan. We're not going to be here in Shittim. So they're there for 3 days, and Yoshua moves the camp to the edge of the Jordan for 3 days to be able to cross, and then the spies come back. So it's this is the, these two chapters are happening in parallel, not in sequence. So everything that's happening in chapter 3, which is the preparation for the crossing of the Jordan, is happening while the spies are in or at Jericho. Right, so just to put in perspective, because we read chapters sequentially, we think of them sequentially. Tanakh doesn't work that way. These things are happening in parallel. So spies are sent, which is why it's chapter 2, right? That Yishlach Yoshua min Hashittim, he sends them from Shittim, but they're not coming back to Shittim. They're going to come back 3 days later and meet Yeshua at the edge of the Jordan. In the meantime, from Shittim, Vayis'u Mishittim, they left Shittim and they came to the edge of the Jordan. Those three, same 3 days. All right. So the question that I want to explore in the second part of this shiur, and the significance of Yoshua having sent them on their own and meet them at the Jordan, we'll come back to all of that. There's a significant piece of it, but it'll become relevant for. I'm planting the seeds for our continuation of this discussion next week. I want to talk a little bit about the spy mission itself, because one of the questions the Mefarshim struggle with is why would Yeshua send spies altogether when the spy mission of Moshe ended so abysmally? And we typically think of the notion of the mission of Yeshua's spies as a kind of a tikkun. Whatever went wrong in the first effort to send spies, in the story of Moshe and the story of the Meraglim, whatever happened there happened right here. Moshe got it wrong, Yeshua got it right. And what I want to demonstrate over the next two shiurim, this week and next week, is the exact opposite. That Moshe got it wrong, and Yeshua got it wrong. Unfortunately for Moshe's mistake cost them dearly. Yeshua's mistake they managed to explicate themselves from and set the course right. But the question becomes, was this spy mission a success or a failure? Yeshua's. And to understand that, we need to go back to Moshe's mission and to try to understand what happened in the story of the Meraglim 1.0. Then we can come back to the Meraglim 2.0, which was the topic of the sheer title, Spies 2.0. All right? So everybody with me, we're going to journey through lots of text today. We're good? You got your, hold on to your seats. Here we go. Somebody mentioned before Moshe's were not spies. The word Meraglim is clearly used in Devarim. We'll come to the issue of what they were and who they were and why, etc. But let's start from the story. The story of the mission that Moshe sends to Israel 38 years earlier appears in many places in Chumash in elaboration, but in two in particular. And you're familiar with this. I'm not going to, this part of Chumash, I'm assuming we're all familiar with the basic issues here. I'm just going to do a quick review of the challenges, and then we'll kind of put all the pieces together next week. But Moshe's mission, or the Meraglim, as they appear in Bamidbar, chapters 13 and 14, which is where the story takes place. Year two, they send people to Israel. They intend to come back with a positive report. They come back with a negative report. Everybody's complaining and kvetching. They don't want to go to the land of Israel. Only Yeshua and Kalev remain loyal. That's the story in a nutshell. But that's not the whole story. That's Bamidbar, Yud Gimel, and Yud Dalet, we'll see. The other place where the story appears is in Devarim chapter 1, 38 years later, when Moshe's retelling the story to Bnei Yisrael. And one of the questions that we need to understand in order to put the pieces of the story together is that there's information that Moshe provides in Devarim chapter 1 that's not in Bamidbar, and there's information in Bamidbar that's not in Devarim. And the question becomes, how do we reconcile this, the contradictions or the challenges, the internal contradictions between the story of the spies as presented in Bamidbar to the story of the spies as presented in Devarim? Everybody understand the problem? Only by putting those two stories together can we get a full picture. I don't subscribe to the theories that two different versions of the story because Moshe retold it and embellished it or changed it. I don't subscribe to that at all. Right? There's two aspects of this story. One part of the story is described in Bamidbar Yud Gimel. Another part of the story is described in Devarim Perek Aleph. We need to put the two together. So to do that, I want to start sketch pieces of Bamidbar Yud Gimel, not the whole story, because our study is Yeshua, it's not Chumash. But we need to understand certain pieces. So I'm jumping back, taking us back in time, 38 years, to Bamidbar chapter 13, Parshat Shlach, as it's referred to. God spoke to Moshe. He said to him, "Shlach lecha anashim v'yaturu et eretz Kanaan." Go, send men. And here, again, translations always do us a disservice because it translates "latur et eretz" as to spy out the land, right? Which is a questionable translation. "Latur" means to see. "Lataturu acharei levavchem v'acharei nechem," which is a pasuk at the end of Parashat Shlach. We have to do it, let them go and see the land which I am giving to Bnei Israel. Ishechad ishechad lamatev, otav tishlachu. One person per tribe, send kol nasi bahem. All of the nisiim. Who are the nisiim? The nisiim are the heads of the tribes. So you take 12 tribes and you send one man, a nasi, in one of the leaders of the tribes. They were men, heads of the children of the tribes of Israel, leaders amongst the tribes, the elders, the statesmen, the Nasiim, the Rashi Bnei Israel. And these are the names. We have the whole list of the names of the Nisim that are sent per tribe, including Kaleb and Yefuneh for the tribe of Yehudah and Hoshea ben Nun for the tribe of Ephraim. Eilu shmot ha'anashim sheshalach Moshe latur et ha'aretz, and Moshe calls Hoshea ben Nun, had called Hoshea ben Nun Yeshua. We talked about that verse once before. And Moshe sent them, Ishtachot ha'Moshe, latur et ha'aretz Kanaan, to go and see the land of Kanaan. Go up the mountain from the south. They were in Kadesh, which is south. Udi temet aretz mahi, see the land and assess it. Ve'ta'am yoshev alei chazak u'nafeh, and assess the people. Are they strong? Are they weak? Ma'atu imav, are they few? Are they many? U'maha'aretz, and what about the land that they dwell in? U'yoshev ba'at tova'im ra'ah, is the land good land? Is it bad land? Ma'he'arim ashu yoshev ba'in, what about the cities they dwell in? Ha'b'machanimim b'miftzarim, do they dwell in camps? Do they dwell in strongholds and fortresses? U'maha'aretz ha'shminayim nazah, is the land fat? Is it lean? Is it, does it have trees? Is it barren? V'itchazaktem v'lekachtem l'pi'aretz, bring back fruits of the land. Bring back the grapes, fruits of the grapes, of the wine. And of course, the famous tourist symbol of the state of Israel is the spies carrying the grapes between them on their shoulders. They went and they journeyed from Midbaitzin all the way to Levo Chamat. Just to put perspective, this is Midbaitzin down here, in more or less the area of the Negev, and Levo Chamat is all the way up here, north of Sidon in Lebanon, northern border of Israel according to most authorities, and north of Damascus. And this is the journey that took, you understand why it took 40 days. Because they had to go all the way up north and all the way down south. So they come to Hebron, and there's this whole story in Hebron, and there are giants in Hebron, Shishai Tamay Yiladei Ha'anak, Achiman Shishai V'Tamay Yiladei Ha'anak. They come to Nachal Eshkol, they cut the branches from Nachal Eshkol, and they carried them and the staffs between their on their shoulders, famous imagery. And they go all the way up north. They come back 40 days later. And as we say, the rest is history. Yes, the land is good. Yes, but Efes, Yazam, the people are strong. And Amalek and everything else. You can just imagine the result of their report. That's chapter 13 in Bamidbar. Now we're going to do a quick glance at Devarim Perek Aleph. Devarim Perek Aleph begins as follows. They are sitting around the Sinai for a number of months. Vanisami Chorev. He traveled from Choreb, we came up through the land of the Amorites. And I said to you, God has given you this land. Go and conquer it. Take possession of it. Do not be afraid, do not be dismayed. Exactly the same two phrases that Moshe gave to you, told Yeshua, and Yeshua later told, God later reinforced to Yeshua. Aleresh. Vatikrivun alai kulchem, but you approached me first and you said, Vatomru, not so fast, nishlacha nashim lefaneinu, we want to send people first. Vyachpru lanu at haaretz, we want them to search out, to dig out, lachbor, to seek out the land, to understand it. V'yashivu otanu davar, let them return a report to us. Et haderech ha'shenaleba, which road should we take to go up? Et ha'arim ha'shenavolem, which cities should we come to first? V'ayta ben ha'davar, and the matter pleased me. V'kach mikem shnei masar anashim mishechad l'shavet, I took 12 men, one from every tribe. And Vayefnu Vialu Ahara, they went up the mountain. Vayavod Nachal Eshkol, they came to the area around Hebron. Nachal Eshkol, Vayaraglu Ota, and they spied it out. There's that word Luragel, hence they're called Meragli. Vayikchum yadam mipri ha'aretz, they took of the fruit of the land, vayoridu aleinu, and they brought it back to us. Vayashivu otanu davar v'yamu, and they reported back to us, and they said, Tova ha'aretz asher Hashem alakeinu naten lanu, the land is very good. That's the report. But you didn't want to go, v'lo avitem la'alot, v'atamru et pi Hashem, and you rebelled. And the rest of it, as they say, is the much more detailed description of the rebellion, and how they claimed, how can we go up? Achenu amasul v'avenu, our brothers melted our hearts, and saying, "I'm gadol v'adam imenu." This is a great nations there, greater than us. Adim gadolot v'tzulot b'shamayim, great and fortified cities to the sky. We saw giants there, gamalakim reinu sham, which is true. And I said to them, and don't be afraid, don't be dismayed by them. God is with you. You'll do what you did to Mitzrayim. But you didn't want to do. Good to go. And so at the end of the story, God gets angry, and he takes an oath, and he says, no member of this generation is going to see the good land that I promised. Zulati Kalev ben Yefune Yeren, with the exception of Kalev. I will give him the land he tread upon, which is, of course, the land of Hebron, because he was loyal to God. Yeshua is not in that list for reasons that are unclear. And then the text says, "Gambit enaf Hashem biglachem lemor." And God was angry at me too. And said to me, "Gamata lo tavo sham, you also won't go into the land of Israel." Yeshua ben Nun, no med lefanecha, hu yavo shama. Yeshua ben Nun, he is your assistant. He will lead the people. Oto chazek yehu yanchilenu et b'nei Yisrael. Yanchilenu et Yisrael. And there's more, but for now, that's enough to begin to unpack a host of challenges, a host of issues. Okay, and I'm assuming I'm not sharing with you a question that you haven't heard before. Many shiurim and parashat Shlach over the years have been said over the reconciliation or the understanding of these two descriptions of the story of the spies. For our purposes for today, what I want to do is I want to outline the questions and begin an approach to understand the answer to the two spy stories as in Chumash. And that'll give us the information we need to be able to analyze Yeshua's spy mission, Bezrat Hashem, next week. Right. Follow how this is? All right. So let's start with the basic question. There are a host of contradictions between the story of the spies as presented in chapter 13 and in Bamidbar, and the story of the spies as presented in Devarim chapter 1. None of them are as dramatic as the first, which of course is the question that all the Mefarshim ask, including Rashi, on the first pasuk of Shlach Lecha Anashim, which is, what's the famous question? Shlach lecha anashim. God says to Moshe, send people to the land of Israel. What is the famous Ramban quotes it, the Rashi quotes it, the all the Mefarshim. Whose initiative was this spy mission? Whose idea was it? Who came up with this brilliant plan? Now, for any question I ask, you have to be able to distinguish, because I'm going to ask the questions about the contradiction, to distinguish between the presentation in Bamidbar and the presentation in Dvar. Because that's what I'm trying to do, is highlight the differences. So if I ask the question, whose initiative was it? And you look at Parshat Shlach in Bamidbar Yud Gimel, your answer is, whose initiative was it? In one word.
Hashem.
God's.
Yeah.
God said to Moshe, Shlach lecha anashim. Send spies. Send people. Let's call them spies. Send people. In fact, Rashi has a problem with the fray, with the contradiction in Devarim, and the fact that this mission ends so abysmally, and so he does something very odd. Right? What does Rashi say? You're familiar with this, Rashi. What does Rashi say on the words, Shlach Lecha Anashim? It's the most difficult Rashi probably in Chumash. Right? What does Rashi say is the meaning of the word, Shlach Lecha Anashim? God says to Moshe, send people. Send men, says Rashi, if you want. I'm not commanding you. Any mitzvah, I'm not commanding you. If you want, send. Shlach. Because in Devarim it says, in Devarim it says that you approached me. In Devarim it says you came to me to ask me to send spies. And Moshe Nimlech Bashkina, so Moshe went and he consulted with God. And God said, okay, you know what? I'm not telling you to do it. I don't think it's such a good idea. But if you want, if you want, okay, go ahead. That's what it says. That's what Rashi says.
Called from the wireless.
That's what Rashi says. The problem is strikingly obvious. Right, and Devarim it says that it's the initiative for the mission came from the people, and in Bamidbar it says the mission for the initiative for the mission came from God. So what does Rashi do? Combines them and he says, yes, the people asked first, and Moshe agreed, because God didn't tell him to do it; God allowed him to do it. And as it says in Devarim, Vayitav beinaya davar. I thought it was a good idea. God didn't think it was such a good idea, but I did, so I sent them. You understand the problem that Rashi's created for us? Rashi's an attempt to address the most profound distinction between the two versions of the spies. Rashi has created for us a very problematic grammatical rule that the word lecha as a verb, adjunct as an addition to a verb, means it's optional. You follow? Shlach lecha. I'm not commanding you, but if you want, lecha, of your own accord. Opening the parashat Lech Lecha, God says to Abraham, what does he say to Abraham?
Lech lecha,
mimolatcha, mibet avicha, lech lecha, go to the land that I will show you. What does Rashi mean to say? Lech lecha is optional? If you want, you can go to the land of Israel. If you don't want, no. Shlach lecha, lech lecha. It's the same phrase. It's the same grammatical structure. How does the parish of the Akedah begin? Right? Let's just finish the. This is the questions the Ramban asks. I'm not adding anything that hasn't appeared in the Mefarshim already. Whoops, that was the wrong source that I wanted to pull up. Let's pull up Chumash Breishit, chapter 20. God tested Abraham and he said to him, Kachna et bincha et yechidcha asher ahavta et Yitzchak, v'lech lecha el eretz Moriah. Go to the land of Moriah. V'aleu sham le'la. What is that optional too? Akedah was also optional. Lech lecha. It's the same phrase. Lech lecha, shlach lecha. Is Rashi suggesting that every time the addendum of lecha appears to a verb, it means it's optional? Ramban says, that's craziness. That's crazy talk. How can you do that? And so he says, no, it's commanded. But the environment said that the people wanted to send spies. So here's my first contradiction. Whose initiative is it? God commands him to send spies? And we're just going to call them spies because it's the easiest terminology to use. And the people ask to send spies. Now, do they both happen at the same time? Zamban says, I kind of navigate the story. I don't know. I just threw out the contradiction. All right. Let's go to a next step. What was the purpose of Moshe's spies? Or Moshe's mission? Bamidbar Yud Gimel. What was the purpose? Uri item et haaretz. See the land. He commands them. He instructs them. He gives them very definitive instructions. Uri item et haaretz. See the land. Its produce. Its fertility. Uma haaretz hashmeinah imazah. Is it fat? Is it lean? Are there trees? Bring us back fruits. Is the land good? Is it good for its habit? And the inhabitants, do they live in fortresses? Do they live in strongholds? Do they live in camps? Are they open? Is it easy to conquer? Right? So there's different parts of the story. You want to know if the people are strong or the people are weak, and you want to know if this land is fertile and the land can sustain fruit and the land can sustain an entire people. Good questions. What was the mission purpose of the spies as described in Devarim Perak Aleph? Yachbu lanu et haaretz, search out the land. When you search out the land, how much of the land do you search? What are you searching for? What are you seeking? Yeshivu etanu davar taderech asher naleba v'tearim asher nevo aleihem. The way to go up, the way to enter, and the city in which to come to first. Meaning, the mission as described in Devarim is not a mission to go through the land north, south, east, and west. It's a mission to enter to the land and begin to look. Okay, where do we go? Where are we supposed to be? What's the first city we're supposed to get to? And if you're coming from the south, what's the first major city you're going to get to? If you're coming from the Negev, right? Just south of Be'er Sheva. What's the first major walled city fortress you're going to get to? Hebron. If you're coming up from the south. So that's exactly why they get to Hebron. Interesting, there's no reference anywhere in Devarim to 40 days. The reference of a timetable of 40 days does not appear in Devarim at all. They take of the fruit, they come to Nachal Eshkol near Hebron, they take of the fruit, they turn, come back. So from Latur, you ought to see the land, north, south, east, west, all the way up to Levo Chamat, 40 days and 40 nights, to Devarim, where the mission is to come to the roads and seek out the city and find its weaknesses and to understand how to conquer it. I summarized, there's a few more differences too, I summarized all the differences between the two portions of the two missions of the spies as described in Chumash. In this chart here on the source page, the initiative in Parshat Shlach describes as coming from God, in Parshat Dvarim coming from the people. The purpose of the mission, Latur, to see out the praise of the land, the produce of the land. In Parshat Dvarim, to spy out the weaknesses of the land, v'yachboru or v'yiraglu, the language lachbor v'leragel doesn't appear in Shlach. It's only there. It only talks about Latur. How far they get to, in Shlach they get all the way up north, Levo Chamat takes them 40 days. In Dvarim they only get to Nachal Eshkol, and they come back. But I want to point out what I believe is the most dramatic difference between them. And this is where our story is going to take us to next week. If I asked you the question, why was Moshe punished and not allowed to enter the land of Israel, and therefore his leadership transferred over to Yoshua? The answer to that question in Sefer Bamidbar is very clear. What mistake did Moshe make that led to the decision for him not to carry the leadership into the land of Israel?
Yeah, he hid the rock and not spoke to it.
The rock. Whatever the chait was in the story of the rock, hitting, speaking, that's a story to analyze, but you're correct. The rock. Parshat Chukat. Okay. And explain to me in Devarim Perak Aleph, when Moshe is describing the spy mission and its failure, and God said to Moshe, Kalev is the only member of this generation who's going to see the land of Israel, it adds two psukim. Gam bi hit anaf Hashem Biglalchem lemor, gam ata lo tavo sham. Not only was God angry at the generation and said, this evil generation will not see the land, nobody in this generation is going to see the land except for Kalev and Yoshua, because Yoshua is going to take over for you, Moshe, because you're also not going to see the land. God was also angry at me because of you and said, you are also not going to go. Yeshua ben Nun, he will take over. He was the other loyal spy in this story. So Kalev, loyalty to Hebron, and Yeshua's loyalty to God, he will take over instead of you. Wait a second. Are you implying here, me, am I implying, is the text implying, that the reason why Moshe was not allowed to enter the land of Israel was because he was punished for the sin of the spies? What happened to the story of the rock in Ne Meriva? So you can navigate, you can argue, well, the Torah, Moshe was just connecting two different stories here in the aftermath. Just as you were punished at the sin of the spies, I was also punished for a different reason. But the Abarbanel says no. The Abarbanel says, I'll share it with you here, really it's extraordinary, that Amnam Chata Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe sinned at the sin of the spies. When the people asked for the spies, they only asked to vote, go to one city and to address the one navigating point, which was where to go, what city to enter, and how to conquer that city. But God only said that they should go and they should see the land. Moshe changed much of this mission. He changed the instructions, and he changed the composition, and he changed the... We're going to see all the things that Moshe changed next week. He commanded them to assess the people, and he commanded them to check the land, and he commanded them to see the cities. The Mei Meriva was just an excuse. Lo siba atzmit, not the real reason. The real reason was the sin of the spies. But out of cover to Moshe somehow in Bamidbar, we didn't want to address Moshe's role in the sin of the spies in Bamidbar, so we waited, and 40 years later Moshe made a mistake, and the Torah said, okay, on that mistake, you're not entering the land of Israel. Abarbanel says something astounding. He goes on to say that the reason Aaron didn't enter the land of Israel was because of Chet Ha'egel. The two greatest sins of our people in the Midbar were Chet Ha'egel and Chet Ha'Meraglim. Aaron had a role in Chet Ha'egel, and Moshe says Abarbanel had a role in Chet Ha'Meraglim.
But it's the same kind of you know, if you look at the rock, and then you look at Chet HaMeraglim, it's the same thing. You know, he didn't follow exactly what God told him to do. So it's
maybe,
the same.
But it's also 38 years. It's also 38 years later. So that's a problem. But yes, it's similar. But in the meantime, my point is that we need to begin, and we're going to continue this next week. Right? What we need to understand is, I'm going to actually stop sharing for a second, is what it looks like. And this is it's a theory that's put forward by, it's written up by Rav Meidan in an article that appeared in Megadim many years ago, volume 10, so we're talking 25, 30 years ago. But it's a fascinating suggestion that, in fact, there were two missions. Two completely separate missions. Like the Abarbanel suggests. One commanded by God, one requested by the people. One was praiseworthy, one was holy, one was spiritual, one was, and we'll talk about it next week, we'll talk about exactly what that mission was. And one was that the people wanted to send spies. Moshe's mistake was he combined them together. Moshe joined the two missions together, and he doomed both to failure. I'm going to say that again. There are two separate missions here. God says, Shlach Lecha Anashim. The people say, Nishlacha Anashim Lefaneinu. Two separate missions happening, the requests happening at the same time. And Moshe combined them together. What we will have to unpack is what was the nature of the first Shlichut that God sent, asked to send, and what was the nature of the second mission that the people asked, and why Moshe's combining them doomed them both to failure. Once we understand that, we can then compare everything about this mission to Yehoshua's mission and see that Yehoshua tried to fix all the mistakes that Moshe made by combining these two missions together. And in so doing, we'll say he stepped on his own minefield and created his own mistakes. We will get to all of that, Bezrat Hashem, in the next 2 weeks' time. So it may take us an extra class, but I'm hoping next week we can sort it all out. But this is really important to kind of have a sense of the picture of the terrain, to borrow a term, of the two mission, the mission in Chumash as it appears in Bamidbar and Devarim, and the mission of Yehoshua as it appears here. And we will explore all of this next week. So thank you for joining. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Over, but thank happy you. To take classes. I'm leaving you with that on the cliffhanger. So you have to come back.
Thank you.
It's fascinating. I don't know. I learned Sefer Yehoshua and I never been noticed. Amazing. Okay. Nice.
Thank you.
Abarbanel also says that the noise, that the plague of the frogs was to echo the noise made by the Bnei Israel complaining about the death of their children.
Interesting. That's an interesting observation. Okay. Wonderful. Have a wonderful day, everybody.
Thank you.